The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And if I did a category of what the hell took so long, no one's going to take the list higher than this. It is Susan Sterling, friend of mine, now Taylor Fladgate, brand ambassador for Ontario, worked with Peller for ages, has been in wine for decades. Susan, thank you so much for doing this. This is all on me. This is my fault that it took so long to get you here.
Matt, I'm happy to be here. And you are, of course, as always, forgiven. It's no trouble at all. No trouble at all.
Okay. Because, yeah, I feel, makes me feel guilty. Let's just start here. What made you first get into wine? Because, as I mentioned, Peller for over two decades. Now with Taylor Fladgate, which is one of the preeminent port producers. You had a web show, the Naked Wine Show, ages ago. Where or why did it all start for you?
It started towards the end of university. We had consumed all the rum and coke that we felt we needed to. And a few of us thought, well, why don't we try this wine thing? And we liked it. Once I was out in the working world, of course, you're out at bars and restaurants, you're with friends, you're at restaurants, started to discover wine that way. Of course, Toronto is a great city for wine events. I started attending those, did a couple classes. What really turned me into a wine professional was I worked in Europe for 2 years leading bike trips in Western Europe. Wine is a key part of European life. As part of my job, I was expected to guide my guests in their wine choices, what goes with this food. I started reading more about it. I realized, hey, I really love this. I can retain all this great information, and what a fulfilling experience this is. And that kind of launched me. When I came back from doing that for 2 years through a connection, I was referred to Andrew Peller Limited. That in those days, it was Andre's Wines. Everyone would remember the Andre's Wines days of Baby Duck. And then I was there for 22 years as territory manager.
All right, let's stick with the biking thing for a second. Where did you take these tours? Because wine tours with bikes, wine areas are hilly. You know, you weren't doing wine tours in Regina, which would be much, much easier. Where did you do this?
All over Western Europe. The area where I went the most, I would say, was split between Austria and definitely lots of hills there, and Italy. I led Italy a lot.
Oof.
Now, we did have one itinerary that was targeted to the more casual cyclist,
right.
And that was in the Moselle Valley in Germany, which so fairly flat most of the time, which meant for fast days for those who want to do it, or you could cycle yourself up into the hills, but there was no need. Yeah, lots of hills. The Tuscany trip was particularly interesting. If you've ever cycled the hill up to Rada, your butt will remember forever, that's for sure. So yeah, the trips were cultural. It was all about like seeing some castles, some churches, experiencing local life, but obviously wine and food was a huge part of that.
You were doing wine media before there was such a thing as a influencer. Like, you were doing it ages ago. So how do we go from, now you're taking the courses, you're obviously, you know, everything that's cycling around Austria and Germany and Italy. How do we go from that to where I got to know you when you were doing the Naked Wine Show?
That happened because once I finished diploma, and lots of people know when you're doing diploma because you don't see them and they wonder why they don't see you. And you're
right.
Like, I'm reading the Oxford Companion to Wine for the fifth time. Sorry, I can't come out. You would know well because you've done diploma. I am still friends with someone who used to be a product consultant at the LCBO. One of his side gigs, though, was as an actor. He had been approached by a producer. They were putting together a wine program. They knew he knew wine, and they asked if he would be a part of it. He ended up declining, but he did say, hey, I know someone who I think would be good in front of a camera who knows lots about wine. Referred me. I did an audition, a couple different auditions, and they said, hey, we're going to make you the host of the Naked Wine Show.
Explain to people what it was, because there are so many of these sort of shows on now, or videos and Instagram where it's people talking about great wines. This was, how long was this, like 15 years ago, like 2010, 11, 12, what are we talking about?
2008.
2008, because even older, yeah.
Yeah, 2008 through, I think, 2010, 11, we did the show. The way, originally they were going to do a panel program, it was going to be a much bigger thing. The decision was made to make it just one person, and they said I would do it. While we were batting around names for this, my producer jokingly, I thought, said to me, hey, how bad do you want to do this? And I said, I really want to do this program. Would you do it naked?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, sure. he took inspiration from the Jamie Oliver program at the time, remember The Naked Chef?
Right.
And it was all about not actually having your clothes off, but about bringing things back to basics. And he said, we're going to name the show The Naked Wine Show. And we're going to have you be on camera and suggest that you're naked, which we did with a smock and camera angles and all the rest of it. And our lawyer at the time had a great line. If anyone ever asked if I was really naked, the answer was to be naked enough.
Right.
So we did that for a couple of years. We had a great time.
Yeah.
We won a Tasty Award. We had so much fun with it and ended up getting signed to a contract at foodnetwork.ca for a different program called Grape Notes.
Yep.
We did a ton of episodes for that, and then just timing didn't quite work out, and so we did the episodes, and then I think we did 90 of them, and then that was it. If anyone's interested, I believe the Naked Wine Show episodes are still up on YouTube.
Everything is on YouTube. You can find it. Actually, did you ever look back at it? Because you were broadcasting. You were broadcasting as a single shoot. It was you on your own. Mm-hmm. Was that tricky? Was that difficult when you started? Or, I mean, the thing is, you've led all these tours and you are an effervescent person. You've always been very good around people. You've always been comfortable talking. I imagine actually for you, it wasn't difficult at all.
Getting used to being in the studio, right? I don't know how cameras work and all that sort of stuff. Was it a tiny adjustment? But basically, I talk for a living.
Right.
I had been a territory manager for Peller for a long time. I was used to talking to strangers about wine. I was very fortunate to have a great crew around me, executive producer, the director, and then we had a chase producer, and they were all excellent veterans of the industry at that point, super supportive. What was really great, too, is that they actually didn't know anything about wine, and that worked because then they would ask me questions that other people might ask, things that I wouldn't think about anymore because I'd been in the business for so long. It led to some great conversations. It gave us a jumping off point for each episode. Early on, we tried to set high standards. We shot in 1080. We said it's a minute or less. That's it. This is our time. And every one of the episodes, there's no cutting. Those are one takes. It's me and a camera and my little smock and away we go.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny about having people around that don't know a lot about wine because it helped to humanize it. If everyone in the room are all WSET and you know, maybe they're advanced or they got their master som, whatever it is, then the conversation could be almost a little over the head of a lot of people that enjoy wine but don't really understand Slovenian versus French oak. So I think that's actually an advantage for those videos because it helps to bring everyone into the tent.
That was the idea. We wanted to make it accessible, much like Jamie Oliver had done with his show about cooking. Hey, listen, it doesn't have to be the cordon bleu every night. You can just whack some fish in a pan and there you go. There's dinner. We wanted to bring wine to people. We only talked about wines we liked, number one. Number two, we came up early with the concept of the one thing. When we were in our pre-production meetings, I would say, okay, everyone, I'm going to talk about the wine and then you're going to stop me when we get to the one thing. The one thing that everyone needs to know about this wine.
Right.
We made that the focus of the episode. We would just, I'd hear goat rolling and I would just talk. And if I was flat, my director, Matt, was terrific. He'd go, cut, you're flat, you're doing it again. And then sometimes we were one and done. Sometimes you just got it down. You know, you're a guy who's on air a lot.
So yeah.
You know how that goes.
Oh, yeah. You could always feel there's nothing better than when you do it one take and it's the first take. You get in, you do the one take and you're done. It's a very satisfying feeling.
It really is. And it's satisfying because you know you've conveyed the message that you're trying to give to people, which is this wine, this thing that people mythologize, is also something that's really just enjoyable to include in your life. And our goal was to give people a way to bring it into their lives.
Right. Yeah. Get it away from mythical and just make it much more human. Actually, let's go back to WSET for a quick second. What do you remember? Because it's been a while, but there's people that are listening that are studying, that are taking the different wine courses at the diploma level. What are some of your memories leading up to the final exams and the final exam?
Oh my gosh, Matt. Just being, you feel like you've fallen under a mountain because there are so many pieces of information. I am forever grateful to the tasting group. So we created a tasting group early on in diploma. There are five of us. And there were a few who kind of came in periodically like guest performers, but there are five core members. Every Sunday for 6 months, we met, tasted through whatever that week's, like Northern Italy, that it was going to be Northern Italy on Monday, Sunday night, we tasted Northern Italy. We often turned it into a meal as well. So there was some bonding. I remember drilling really hard on how fast we could taste because we knew under exam conditions, it's always extended. Yep. We were like, we have to get this down to 5 minutes of wine, period. I remember that a lot. Those were some really great times. I'm still friends with those people. They are treasured members of my friend group. What else do I remember? I remember the first time I was going to write Unit 3, which is a massive exam.
Yeah, that's still wine.
It's the whole world. Yeah, it feels like
yeah, everything. It's a big one.
I was invited to go to France. I had taken off 5 days to finally study. And then someone said, hey, listen, and the details are unimportant, but I was invited to France and I went, and so I didn't actually study. And then I failed that exam. But I have no regrets because I got to hang out in France for 5 days, which was really good. Yeah, those are probably two of my biggest memories. I remember this sense of camaraderie, we're all in this together. Let's get to the end as best we can. It was a good time. I'm glad I did it.
I still remember walking out of that exam with everyone. And it was, I just thought about that now when you said camaraderie, because that's what it felt like. And you're just like, everyone's like, oh my God. And I had blisters on my finger because you're writing so much and you're just writing so hard. And then is there anything more insecure than talking to other people about, hey, what do you think that flight was? Oh, I mean, that is just, you don't want to ask, but you can't help but ask.
You can't. And then one of us had picked, we'd said something was like a mid-range Prosecco and it was Grand Cru champagne or something like this. And we said, the great thing about WSET is that it's not about circus tricks. It's not about saying this grew on the hillside at a 40 degree angle to the sun kind of thing. It's about an assessment of quality. And so your conclusion is only one point. Mm-hmm. If your notes all lead logically to that conclusion, you're still going to pass that question. You're only going to lose a point, and I love that, the sort of democratic approach of the WSET.
The weird thing is when you don't do it all the time, it's funny how you can lose a little bit of your edge. I was at a VQA event last week. We're taping this on June 12th, and it was all these different blind tastings. Now, it wasn't like we were being judged. We were just doing it at a table and just chatting about it. It was very informal, and there wasn't pressure. But I'm still sitting there going over six wines, trying to make notes in a very quick period of time. I'm like, oh, you know, it's been a little while since I've had to identify my tertiary notes for an older Cab Franc.
I still do nerd notes. A lot. When you've done hundreds, possibly thousands, as you know, in the study of diploma, it's like you can't forget how. It's like riding a bike. Honestly, every time you sit down in front of a wine with a piece of paper and a pen, you automatically start at the same place.
Yes.
And I really like having those notes. I keep them. I have them in a book. And every now and then you go back and you look at it. And it tells a great story. Sometimes I have notes about where I was when I tasted them. Sometimes not. But I find them a great resource. And having done it for so long, it's actually takes me no longer to do that than it would to talk about it, really.
Let's bounce to today. And we'll get back to all things Peller and actually Ontario wines and things like that. Explain to people, what does it mean to be a brand ambassador for Ontario? Actually, let's start here. What do people need to know about Taylor Fladgate?
So much history, so much quality. Definitely one of the leading producers of port, founded in 17th century, still run by descendants of the original families. Taylor and Fladgate were real people. They set an incredibly high bar for quality and variety. You can get a port from them in this market in Ontario for $19, and you can go up into the hundreds. The quality is high across the board. And I think port actually is underpriced when you consider all the things that go into making it, all the person hours that go into making it, the difficulty of harvesting the grapes, the durability, there's so much. I've argued for forever that port is actually underpriced versus the effort that it takes to make it.
It reminds me of sherry.
It's the same idea.
Yeah, it's the same thing where it's so much that goes into it.
Yeah.
And it's like the under $20 is fairly safe.
Yeah.
You know, you can get someone says, hey, I know you like Cabernet from California. I found one for under 20. And I'm like, oh boy. All right, everyone hold on. But with port, it can, you know, it's actually, even though it's scary for people because maybe they don't drink it, they don't really know it, what it is, it's actually a very safe product if you're getting the entry-level stuff.
I agree. Certainly there are quality differentials between certain producers.
Yeah.
However, in general, a reputable house will give you a high quality of port.
Mm-hmm.
Taylor Fladgate for sure. Yeah. I knew of Taylor Fladgate and had visited their facility on a trip to Portugal in 2011. So I knew of Taylor Fladgate long before this opportunity came to me. I'm thrilled to be working with such an esteemed brand.
Their 20-year-old Tawny is my go-to. Even before you told me about this job, the Taylor 20-year-old Tawny is my favorite. We'll talk about Tawny in a second. But what are some of the biggest misconceptions that people have with port? And obviously, this is now more of your life than in the past. What are some of the misconceptions?
I think the barrier to entry for port is, number one, they're all sweet. And so if you don't like sweet wine, then perhaps port is more of a challenging drop for you. The thing about port is that it's actually quite versatile. So you can have it with savory items. You can have it with dessert. you can have it for dessert. I think what people don't understand, it's production. So my point about the price, I think one of the reasons the price is low is that most people don't understand how port is made. So what we find, people can be risk averse when they don't understand the production of a particular product. Port also, you don't have to drink the whole bottle right away. People look at a 750 ml of port and they think there's no way I can put that down in an evening.
Yeah.
I don't recommend that anyone does.
No.
By the way, in the LBV, for example, it's 93 grams of sugar per liter.
And LBV is
late bottled vintage, insider jargon there. Sorry, late bottled vintage. It's quite sweet, but you can, once it's open, you can keep it for a little while. Depends on the port, but you know, you've got at least a few days. I say, frankly, you've got at least a month if it's kept in the fridge, and I speak from personal experience. It goes with savory items. You can add it to cooking if you're doing a sauce reduction. You can make things like port jelly. There's all kinds of uses. I think what people don't understand is the versatility of port and how you don't have to just kill the whole bottle in one night.
Actually, this is a good point because, it feels daunting. You have a glass and like, okay, I'm good. I'm satisfied. You know, oh shit. Now it's like, it's like the clock is ticking, like an alcoholic version of Mission Impossible where it's like, all right, everyone, quick, we need to finish this right now.
Yeah. The great news is that port is often available in half bottles. So if you look, vintage port is often sold as a half bottle. There's a line extension coming, the late bottled vintage from Taylor Fladgate in the fall. We will be launching a 375 ml bottle, which will offer people an opportunity to spend a little less money and have less port. If they just want to have a glass or two with one or two people, or over the course of a week, they can do that without worrying about leftovers.
I think the other thing, and Bordeaux certainly has had this issue as well, where there is a perception of elitism, where it's port, it's in a stuffy British men's only club, or it's Niles Crane and Fraser Crane.
Right.
Like I think for a lot of people, that's what they think of as port. They don't think of it as just something that everyone should have around the home.
I agree with that. And I think that image was perpetuated for a long time. I think people wanted it to seem fancy. They wanted it to feel exclusive. I think that is a deliberate choice. My job is to both confirm that, yes, it's great for high-end occasions, and also offer people an opportunity to think of it in a new way, a fresh way. For example, white port. There's not a lot of it in the Ontario market, at least at the moment. White port is fresher, lighter. It's still sweet, but it's not the heavy thing in a decanter that sits next to the Stilton on the sideboard.
I think, in a way, how the sparkling market is telling people there's more than just champagne.
Right.
But by the way, I have the champagne. But Tuesday is fine for Prosecco or Cremant.
Right.
Just like on a weeknight, you want a glass of Ruby Port, perfect. It doesn't have to be after your son's graduation.
Correct. Absolutely.
Where does it fit, do you think, where does it fit in the market today? But where do you think it should fit in the market? And it's a tough one because where 30-year-old Tawny versus late bottled vintage, those are two different places and two different products.
Well, that's an excellent question. I've only been in the job 2 months, not even. So I'm not sure that I have a great answer for you at this time.
By the way, hold on. Did you say that was a great question to stall for a second to come up with an answer, or was it actually a great question?
It is actually a great question because it is central to what I now do for a living.
Yeah.
Answering that question is precisely why I have a job. Just off the top of my head, I would say it's more of what you just said, incorporating into a weekday opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Can we have this with pudding? I'm a big fan of custard.
Yeah.
So can we just do something like that? I love doing a high-low match no matter what I'm talking about. And as you know, I'm a humongous fan of sparkling, and I'm a big fan of like, let's have that on Tuesday because we managed to get through the day without smacking somebody in the face. So how do we find a way for people to incorporate this as a more, I'm not going to say everyday item, but a more than once a year type of a scenario? With any luck, you and I will continue to have this conversation. And when I come up with a brilliant answer, I hope you're nearby and I'll tell you.
No, it's actually fun chatting with you now, but I have to remind myself you've only been in this for a couple months.
Right.
That must be fun. Like, I mean, how different is this before? You were with Andrew Peller for over two decades. So your life was Niagara, was Ontario wine. Now you're going from that to one of the flagship port producers in Portugal. I mean, those are two completely different worlds you're now getting into. That's exciting.
They are, and it is exciting. Andrew Peller Limited is a massive company, operates nationwide, departments and departments and departments of people. And now my official employer here in Ontario is an agency called Sylvestre Wine and Spirits. They're based in Quebec. On top of my duties as a brand ambassador for Taylor Fladgate, which is the vast majority of what I do, I'm also doing territory management for them 2 days a week. So I'm dealing with the rest of their portfolio and getting to see things from a purely agency side, which is not something I really did at Peller. There is an import agency there, but I didn't run it, certainly. Being up close and personal with more of the decision-making, because it's a much smaller team, has been really eye-opening. I am enjoying it so much. I learn something from my colleagues every single week. I'm like, oh, that's really neat. So it's quite a different thing. And I'm a one person show as the brand ambassador,
right,
kind of thing. Like, I'm the one who goes out and does all the tastings. I'm the one who sets them up. I deal with the list. He's like, I'm doing everything, and I'm really enjoying that shift and learning how to operate as one person.
Actually, totally off topic. The gardener being the construction. I mean, that's got to be, because for your job, that means you got to be in a lot of different places. Oh, I mean, Waze, you must spend so much time looking at Waze before you leave.
At the moment, we're still in the planning stages of doing events.
Right.
Because I'm still trying to figure out, what do I want to say specifically? What does the event look like? Eventually, public transportation will be a big part of how I get around to anything downtown. It simply has to be.
Yeah.
There's no other way to do it. So I think we'll kind of do a combination of public transportation, Uber, taxi cab.
Prayer, helicopter.
Something like that. You know, there are ways to make it work. You just have to plan.
Yeah. I think about people that have to move around in the city. I'm like, I feel what you have to deal with now versus what you had to deal with 20 years ago is so different.
Even not, and I'm not right downtown every day. And even then, I notice the roads are much more congested.
Yeah.
There seems to be construction absolutely everywhere out into Mississauga. Just, you need to triple your time estimates to get anywhere. So then you're right. That can present a challenge to what I have to do.
Yeah, thinking about it, with Port, it's almost like the same thing with Bordeaux. We got to take it off the pedestal. Bordeaux isn't about drinking Latour every night.
Right.
I can steer you to a $22 bottle of Cru Bourgeois that's going to have a little bit of mushroom and earthy in the plum. Like, it's going to have what you want. It's going to satisfy your Bordeaux, but it's, you know, it's not always this holy grail thing that you must decant for 7 hours and on bended knee before you drink it. And I think that's the same way. I think that's the same way with Port.
Yeah. The Taylor Flaggate First Estate, which is now in the Ontario market, is $19 a bottle. Non-vintage.
Mm-hmm.
So blend from multiple. I liken it to non-vintage champagne.
Right. Right.
You'll have a house style. Every time you open it, it should taste the same way. Accessible at $19, it's a terrific price point. And, you know, if you get through half of it and then you use the rest in sauce, okay, you'd pay $19 for a bottle of red wine and you might end up doing the exact same thing.
Yeah.
I really like that Taylor Flaggate has come out with this First Estate. It welcomes people into the port category at a very accessible price point and, frankly, an accessible taste profile. It's a ruby port. It's sort of the thing when you think of port, it's probably the first thing that comes to mind is what comes out of the bottle when I pour First Estate.
Yeah, cool. Actually, I'm curious, you know, just to see how that part of your journey goes. And you're going to Portugal soon. Oh, my God. I mean, for people who haven't been, just how gorgeous is the area that you're going to be?
Oh, it's simply breathtaking. Anytime you're in a river valley, there's the drama, right? Because you've got these height changes and all that sort of stuff. Portugal is an ancient country, right? So you've got all these buildings that are hundreds of years old. Every time I go to Europe, you're reminded that the church on the corner that doesn't look like very much is older than the country where I live, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Portugal is stunning. And Porto is a beautiful city. It's a bit hilly, so you've got these sort of dramatic vistas, if you will.
It'd be tough for bike tourists in some of it.
It can be enormously challenging, rewarding at the same time. You know, you get up to the top of a big fat hill and, ooh, look at this. I can see for miles. And of course, there's always delicious food everywhere you go in Portugal. When I was there doing a bike trip, we lived like royalty for very reasonable prices. We loved Portugal. So I can't wait to go back. I'm so excited.
So let's go back to Andrew Peller. Okay. First off, for people that don't know, what does it mean? And I was like asking this question because I have the easiest day job to explain to people what I do. I turn the radio on. I make fun of the Maple Leafs. I turn the mic off. Like, just, it's so easy. But then when my friends, I have no idea what a lot of my friends do. And I've been friends with them for four decades. And they'll explain, I'm like, what do you do Wednesday at 11 a.m.? Because I can tell you what I do at Wednesday at 11 a.m. So just what did it mean? Because there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that have these jobs, just to be the territory manager for a winery. In your case, it was Andrew Peller.
So territory management can be on the retail side. So dealing in Ontario, dealing with the LCBO. There is a grocery channel now, which has been much in the news. then there was a licensee channel as well. And at Andrew Peller Limited, those roles tend to be broken out. There's a licensee team, and then there is the retail team, which takes in the LCBO and grocery. For the majority of my career, I was on the retail team.
Mm-hmm.
I did do a brief stint, 2 years on the licensee side of things to see how that goes. And what you're doing, it's almost like advanced field marketing in a lot of ways. You are flying the flag for Andrew Peller Limited, which is an enormous company. You are doing LCBO staff education sessions to let them know about either new products or existing products, giving the LCBO staff a way to talk about your product, giving them the confidence to recommend it to someone, or even if they hate it, at least be able to answer the question, will this go with roast beef? Yes. Great. Awesome. You don't need to give chapter and verse. Most customers aren't interested in that kind of information. They just want to know, is this really tannic? No? Great. I'm going to take that then.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff. You're also doing, and in my case, as territory manager, I did a lot of extra stuff, little extracurricular things, coming up with programming, trade marketing initiatives, that kind of thing. You're always trying to drive the business forward. You're trying to, basically, it's about getting boxes of wine out the door. At the end of the day, that's what territory management is. Find a way to get more boxes of wine out the door.
Yeah. How many times have you ever been tempted when you're just at the LCBO buying something and you hear, you know, an employee talking to some customers and you want to just swoop in and not try to be the hero, but just add to it. Like there are times where somebody asking, well, I don't know if I really want this Chardonnay and you know, the staff member is explaining about this or that. And I just want to come and go, no, that Chardonnay there, you'll love it. It's fine. Like, but then I'm like, no, Matt, don't do it. Just go be you over there quietly. There has to be times where you've been tempted.
Tempted and have done.
Okay. Tell me how you've done.
Not a lot, but there have been times when I have been standing right next to the wine,
mm-hmm.
looking at something in my portfolio, and the customer asks the staffer, and if the staffer doesn't know, and then they're often quite honest, they'll say, well, I personally haven't had it. I can't really speak to that. And I'll say, excuse me for, you know, eavesdropping, I'm standing right here. I have had this wine, or I do know something about it. You want to be sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
To, obviously, you don't want to show anyone up.
Yeah.
At the same time, if the customer has a question and I can answer it, I think it's my job as sort of a, not to make it sound too grand, but you are kind of a wine ambassador, even if you are representing one particular company. You're an ambassador for the entire thing. You're out there and you can answer a question. Why wouldn't you do it? There are times when I have held my tongue because it hasn't been prudent, or I don't really have anything useful to add or whatever, but there more than once I have actually jumped in and said, I can actually answer this question for you and X, Y, and Z.
The only times I've ever done is after the staff member left, and if the person's still looking, I'll be like, hey. And it's really, it's never to show off or, hey, look what I know. It's more just to reassure. I'm like, hey, you know what? I've had it. Good wine. You're going to like it.
Exactly, Matt.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not trying to flex our muscles necessarily.
No.
We love wine though, as we just love it, and we want to share that love with people. So to your point about reassurance or something like that, or hey, have you considered this one over here? I've had it and it's delicious. You're trying to bring people into something that you love, that's all.
I remember years ago, one of my favorite parties you ever threw, and you've thrown many great parties, we did a crazy tasting of all these old back vintages.
Yes.
And
the Trius Red tasting.
The Trius Red tasting.
Yeah.
And I, like, my journey into Ontario wine is so different. It's so dramatic. Like, when I first met you, what I felt, especially about Ontario Red versus now, it's night and day.
Yep.
But I think that event was one of those ones that opened my eyes where these Trius wines were 15, 17 years old, and some of them were drinking beautifully, some were horrible, but just you had the vintage variation. And it was this moment I realized, oh, wait a minute, it's not like this is a crazy expensive wine, but it can go away for 17 years and it changes. And I think that was one of those times that opened my eyes to just what Niagara is all about.
Yes. Trius Red is certainly a flagship brand, if you will, for Niagara, and always shows well. I was really happy to be able to do that tasting, that mm-hmm. I had the collection, and that so many of you wanted to come and do it, because that was quite a night. I mean, we had glasses everywhere and wild amounts of wine. It was really, really good. Niagara wine has come a long way, definitely. There are still challenges in getting other people to believe that.
Yeah.
Those of us who know it well. But there's tall poppy syndrome in Canada, where we don't like to celebrate our own. So there's often a mistrust. Oh, well, it's probably not going to be that good. I find that is disappointing. I find restaurants as well, particularly in Toronto, will avoid it. They'll talk about their locavore menu and look at us and our craft beer and our hand-pressed cider. But then they're serving some random Chilean white by the glass. And the disconnect to me, I find it disturbing. Would you like it if people never came to your restaurant? They said, well, I'm just going to go to Chile to eat because you can't possibly cook anything here. So I am a homer in that I will defend VQA wine to the ends of the earth. And I'll even defend the blended stuff, IDB stuff. Without it, we don't have an Ontario wine industry, right? Without the Hochtalers and the Domaine d'Ors of the world, the Maria Christinas, we don't get this party started.
Yeah, it's the same way. That's how I view Yellowtail.
Yeah.
It's like we can talk about some of the flaws of Yellowtail, or it just doesn't fit my palate.
Right.
But a lot of those wines are the ones that people first drank in their early 20s.
Yep.
And then they started liking wine, and then they drank a wine that was a little bit better. Then they went to a Wolf Blass, and like, okay, now I'm going to try something from California.
Yep.
And then the journey goes, and now they're trying everything. Someone who had such a long relationship with the LCBO, have they gotten better over when you started versus the end in terms of promoting the O in the L, C, and the B?
They are a business, even though it is part of the government. It's a government agency. They are not immune to the challenges of the marketplace.
Right.
One of their challenges is they want to meet the customer where the customer is. And if the customer is not demanding a certain thing, you often do not find a lot of it at the LCBO. There have been some notably good initiatives on the part of the LCBO promoting VQA ones. They have VQA designated stores, for example. For a long time, the store setup demanded that VQA be given a privileged position. They have Ontario Wine Month that runs sort of mid-September to mid-October. They make an effort. It's not for me to say, you know, we have my magic wand and it's going to be perfect. Every
right.
time, every business is going to be challenged. I think the LCBO makes an effort. As an industry, though, in Ontario, there's a lot that can be done to drive this process forward independently of the LCBO.
Like the restaurants.
There's restaurant, but there's also quality control. The French, first of all, they've been making wine for hundreds of years. So people believe that the French can make good wine. But you and I both know there's plenty of terrible French wine.
Oh, yeah.
Plenty of it. It's just that people give France a pass because, well, it's France.
Benefit of the doubt.
Benefit of the doubt. Always, oh, I just had one bad French wine. Whereas I think as Canadians, we really want to support VQA. I think people really do want to support that. But they have one bad VQA and they think, oh, my gosh, the entire category is tainted. Now I can't ever. They don't give it a chance. For the producers in Ontario who are not making great wine, what I would like to see is an industry push to raise that bar, make it so that more of the VQA wine that comes out is uniformly good.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not just stamp on any old grapes and put wine in bottles because the LCBO announced an initiative to bring in more stuff or whatever the case may be. As an industry, I think in Ontario, there could be more done to kind of separate the wheat from the chaff.
Right. Yeah, and it's almost more important here because there isn't as much of the benefit of the doubt. So
precisely.
it's like okay, everyone's got to have their shit together because you can try some horrible Languedoc, Syrah, but it's not going to – someone will still then go spend $100 on a bottle of Cornas. Like,
correct.
But here, everyone's got to have their P's and Q's going.
It's difficult to build a brand in any market. Full stop, whether it's Ontario or not, right? The quality has to be there to build a brand because you're competing against so many other people who have the same idea. They want to sell their wine too. When you do it correctly a lot of the time, then you build up that brand. Trius Red is a perfect example, right? Mm-hmm. We're doing Bordeaux style reds in a place where before global warming, it was harder, right? There was a lot that went into that. And you're really showing off the tagline there was the art of the blend. And there are others as well, right? You've got some great wines out of Inniskill and Jackson Triggs make some great stuff. And you have people who have pushed the category forward, building those brands, and it can be backbreaking work. So anything that we can do as an industry to push that forward, I think, is a good thing.
It must have been tougher for you when you started. I think there's more awareness now, and I think the overall consistent quality of wine is much higher in, like, say, 2021
right.
versus 2005.
Right.
But yeah, that must have been hard for you in those early years, just trying to push the product.
Absolutely. Especially when I did licensee, because VQA.
Could you explain licensee? I forgot. A licensee to
restaurants.
Yeah, restaurants. Yeah, yeah.
Restaurants and bars.
Yeah.
Anywhere that has a liquor license,
mm-hmm.
I call a licensee. Now, when I was doing licensee sales, we were in a recession. Everyone was looking for the absolute maximum value. And in Canada, there are reasons why our wines are not $2 a bottle.
Yeah.
Right? Good defensible reasons, but very boring ones when you're in the middle of a sales call. Like, hey, listen, I've often joked that if I ever started a VQA brand, I would name it, this pays for your healthcare. because there's so many taxes. Rightly or wrongly, there's a lot of taxation on domestic production.
Yes.
For a reason. It's just boring. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to talk about a KPMG study when they're just trying to keep the restaurant afloat.
Right.
So, yeah, there are definitely some challenges. Obviously, that's better. The industry as a whole in Ontario, I don't want to make it sound like I think they're doing a bad job. They're not. Quite the opposite. They're doing a great job. And I encourage them to keep moving forward. And the more great VQA wine that gets into the market, the more you will see it on a restaurant wine list, and the more people will order a glass and drink it.
I love that label. This helps pay for your health care. By the way, we pay our workers better than in other parts of the world as well.
There are lots of places where winery workers are paid nearly nothing. Mm-hmm. Or there are subsidies that are given to the wineries that simply aren't enjoyed by an Ontario producer. There are lots of challenges to making wine in Ontario.
Yeah. And I think one of it is about telling the stories. And I do get it why restaurants where the wine is there to help with profit. So it can be harder explaining, no, this Cab Franc is the same price as your Loire Red.
Yeah.
And the Ontario one is just as good. Actually, it's probably actually a little bit better.
Yeah.
It actually is better, but it can be hard because then you got to try to sell that to a dinner table, and you've got like 28 seconds to do it.
Yeah.
So that is really, that's actually, when people are at the LCBO, what do they need to know? Because a lot of it is about placement and where things are. And for most people, they just go in and they wander around, but there is much the same way with a newspaper. When I look at the front of a newspaper, I'm like, okay, that got a picture, that didn't. That got to be centered here. The headline for that one is a larger font than that one. And there's story going on the front page of a newspaper. And I imagine it's the same way, the story of when you walk into an LCBO.
The difference is that prominent placements are paid for at the LCBO. There are marketing programs, whereas people don't pay to get a story on the front page. Well, at least we imagine they don't pay to get a story on the front page of the Toronto Star. They pay for advertising, which is quite clearly advertising. Mm-hmm. The same is true at the LCBO. They have a lot of different programs for suppliers. You can be a part of a lot of them and part of a little of them, and you will pay to be prominently displayed on those particular ends. In terms of shelf position, in just a regular shelf, often that is dictated by the sales of a product. If it sells a lot, it's often in a prominent position, but it's also driven by price points, right? Naturally, people will buy a thing that's closer, so they don't necessarily look up or look down. Mm-hmm. So you'll find usually the most expensive in any category is sort of in the middle or the top of a shelf. If people are looking for bargains, things they may not have noticed, I would say look down, look at the lower shelf. Just because it's on a lower shelf doesn't mean it's lower quality. It can often mean it's lower price. And in a category that's quite small, where there isn't a lot of room, somebody's got to be on the bottom shelf.
Right.
Right. Somebody's got to be there. This is where the LCBO staff can be super helpful. Leading back to when I do my staff education sessions, the whole point of doing that is so that a staffer in a store will be there and someone says, hey, have you had this? I see it's new, or I don't recognize this one. It's on the bottom shelf or something like that. And a staffer would say, oh, we had that. Yeah, you know, that's lovely. I got some flavors of pears and apples, and I think it would be great with salmon or whatever they want to say. And they don't even have to go that far. Yeah, we had that. Really light, crisp, delicious. Done.
Perfect. The front and Spadina LCBO has been my favorite now.
Is it?
And this is so hyper-local. Apologies, I'm not from Toronto. But I every now and then, that's what always has like crazy sales. It feels like there's different LCBOs that'll have those 30% sales. And people like me, and there's a lot of us out there, we're like sharks. We're just going in and we're just, you know, trying to find that German Riesling. We know it's not going to be Burgundy. We're fine with that. There's not going to be a lot of 30% off Burgundies, but that one there is my favorite. I don't know your habits when it comes to like scoping out LCBOs, like your jaws chasing after Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah, it's true. Each LCBO can make their own determination in terms of the 30% off. Sometimes there are board delisted products, things the LCBO says we're not going to carry anymore, and those prices are dropped. But each LCBO can also specifically delist, get rid of something that's not selling, they've got too much, whatever, and they can mark it down. So each LCBO, it depends. It depends on who's running that store, whether there's a big markdown section or not. Like you, I will definitely troll for the clearance end. I look for the big end aisle that says clearance.
Yeah.
I definitely go in there. I'm always looking for sparkling. I basically have no limit on how much sparkling I will buy. or interesting things, to your point, like a German Riesling or something unique that I haven't tried, some interesting Italian thing. I'm like, oh, that's $12. I'm taking that. That's whatever that is. That's going to be interesting at $12. Yeah, I'm the same. I definitely go trolling around the outside for the clearance aisle. If I don't find it, Vintages sometimes has its own. I'll go in there and find those tags. 100%, Matt. I'm always on the lookout for some kind of deal.
Yeah, I think one of my favorites was just some Northern Italian Merlot.
Yeah.
And it was normally like $70, and I was going for $43. I'm like, okay, I got to see. And it was so good.
Yeah.
And now I see that same label, and it's now up to like $90. Yep. I'm like, ah, oh, you son of a bitch. Yeah. And I'm just going to wait to see if you're going to be. But I'm sitting there, and I'm looking. Is that a Wayne Gretzky signed bottle of wine on your counter there?
That is.
That is what's the story behind that fella?
Well, Wayne Gretzky Wine got started at a different winery, but was purchased by Andrapella Limited. We took over the brand, and when we did, one of the things we got to do as a sales team was meet Wayne Gretzky. We got to have lunch at what was then Wayne Gretzky's, the restaurant, which is now gone in Toronto. He had lunch with us and the management group in a private room. We were each given a bottle, and he signed it in front of us. And then if we wanted to purchase merchandise from their memorabilia shop,
yep,
they have these mini hockey sticks. They were the cutest. He was so great. We brought in any old thing we had. We all bought like a dozen hockey sticks, and he was so patient and so kind, and he sat there and he signed everything. And I'll tell a quick Wayne Gretzky story, if you don't mind.
No, do it.
Okay, so we're in Wayne Gretzky's, right, downtown Toronto. And I was a little later coming out of the room. Wayne and his team have moved out, and they're now in the restaurant. And it wasn't, I don't think it was open that day. It was a Monday or something. So it wasn't normally open, but it had opened for us. And it was about to open for dinner. We'd been there for lunch. And these teenage boys are walking in from outside and come face to face with Wayne Gretzky. And they addressed him as Mr. Gretzky, which is just the cutest and such a Canadian thing to do and so sweet. And they wanted a picture. And I happened to be right there. And I said, oh, let me take it for you, that like so that you're all in it. So I took their picture, I took several of them, and they were so happy. And then he turned and he said, so where are you guys from? And they said, Edmonton.
Oh.
And it was just the nicest. He was so, so sweet to them. He was so great to all of us. But I just love that story about him. And I thought, what are the chances that two 15-year-olds from Edmonton come walking in and come face-to-face with Wayne Gretzky? It was wonderful.
Oh, that's super
and that cool. Wine, and by the way, that wine brand is also delicious. Craig McDonald took it over originally, and the winemaking team that handles it does such great work. The quality on there is absolutely impeccable.
Let's go to more of a, I don't want to say negative, but something that's very relatable. There was, I remember when you were let go with Peller, mm-hmm. I wasn't worried because I know you're hardworking, super talented, curious, but that's easy for me on the outside. And a lot of people are listening, they've lost a job, and a lot of them now are not working, but there's that period in between, and, you know, it's like insecure. And I'm just wondering, what was that period like for you between Peller and before Fladgate?
Right. The restructuring that happened was nationwide. I was in the same boat as about 49 other people where we got let go. That particular day was quite hard. That was a hard day. Absolutely. You spend 22 years working with people. Some of them I'd worked with from the very beginning. The woman who recruited me to the company, for example.
Yeah.
It's like being cast out of the family because you know these people so well, and you spend every working day talking to them or communicating in some way. On the other hand, you understand that this is a business decision, and this happens. I've read up, no business is immune to downturns in the market, and it's been quite challenging for beverage alcohol. I chose to treat it as an opportunity. Instead of looking at it as a tragedy, although day one, I'm not going to lie, there was a lot of crying, I chose to look at it as an opportunity. Is there something else I might like to do now? Is there something I have not explored? I took the opportunity to rest, reset, did a bit of traveling to places that I'd wanted to go, all the while applying for different things, different industries, some in the wine industry, some not. One of the things that I learned in career transition services was you need to let people know what you want. What kind of position is interesting to you? One of my diploma tasting group friends happened to see something on a jobs board. It was the Taylor Fladgate brand ambassador position. I had mentioned an interest in being a brand ambassador. She forwarded that to me. I sent in a resume, had multiple meetings over multiple months, and here we are. So all in all, I think the sadness, of course, remains. I miss my people. Of course I do. At the same time, there is this great excitement that now I have been given an opportunity, if you want to look at it that way, to try something else, to flex new muscles and to learn new things. And then I love to learn new stuff. So that's fun.
Yeah, and there's something similar as we discussed earlier, trying to raise awareness about a product. You did that for 2 decades with Niagara Ontario Wine, and now you're doing it with Port. And even though it's different, like Port is established, like Port, it actually does have the benefit of the doubt. Everyone's like, oh, okay, Port. But now it's like, oh, I don't know if Port's for me. And then you're like, no, Port is for you. I remember when the first time I was let go from TSN Radio, and it was same thing. It was Bell restructuring from coast to coast. So that's why I started the wine podcast. And that's why I went to New Zealand and discovered, Jesus, they make great Bordeaux blends in Waiheke Island. It's not just Sauvignon Blanc for people out there. So, and yeah, it's the same thing. It's like you have this opportunity.
That's it.
What are you drinking now? We're going to end this soon. I was just wondering, what are you enjoying now? Is there tips you would give for people
Ooh.
listening? Food, wine pairings? Like, this is me now just using your brain for the people out there listening. And I know it's a big question to answer.
It's
What
a
are you
huge
drinking?
question. It's a
What are you
huge question.
drinking now?
Well, I sample widely. Now that I work for an agency, I have worked my way through most of that portfolio. As you know, I'm a humongous fan of bubbles, sparkling wine. So what I'm drinking right now is Veuve Amballe, which is a Crémant de Bourgogne, represented by Sauveste Wine and Spirits. I love it. I love a Crémant. I often joke it's one of the last French wine bargains. It used to be reliably be able to find a bunch of them at the LCBO for under $20, but global economic realities being what they are, everybody's prices have gone up. But for $20-odd, Veuve Amballe, a little Crémant, I love it. And I'm a big fan of things like contrast matches. So I'll have it with potato chips, popcorn, savory stuff. I love it on if I on the weekend, I don't even bother with making a mimosa. If I'm having guests, I'll just make an omelet and that, and I'll be like, if you want orange juice, you can, but I wouldn't bother. So that's what I'm drinking. I'm always drinking some bubbles, Matt. You know me, that's what I do.
The flute, yay or nay?
Yay.
Okay, because that's a controversial one about what should the stemware be with their sparkling?
Now, I will say an ISO glass, so what people would look at and think of as a traditional tasting glass, shorter stem, tulip-shaped glass, the one that we all use for all our diploma nerdery.
How many, by the way, do you have any of those still left?
I do. I have several. I've broken lots over the years, but I think I have 2 dozen left.
Oh, wow. I only have about two or three left from my original six that you got on day one of your WSET.
Oh, there was used to be a wine store, and I forget what it was called, on the Esplanade, and they had ISO glasses in the flat, so there were like 40 of them or 48 or whatever they were, and they'd been used or something and then washed, and they were selling them for $1.50 a stem. And I don't know how I figured that out or found it, but I went running down there and I got the entire flat. So I think I had 48, which is a lot. Over the years, I've broken some. I might have 30 left, but they're brilliant. So I will say, if you don't have flutes, and you don't want to get flutes, an ISO glass will sort you right out for bubbles because it's still narrow enough, and then you can serve anything in it. The whole point of that glass is that it's a standard glass. So sometimes if you want to use an ISO glass, also fine.
As we end this, tell people what's the best website, where's the best place to go to find Taylor Fladgate, and just again the elevator pitch for people out there that are like, oh, I don't know about having port in my life, why they should reconsider.
The line I come up with for port is, it takes many steps to make it, but only one sip to love it. Port is unique, interesting, historical, and delicious. In terms of finding it, in Ontario, it's represented by Sylvester Wine and Spirits. So Sylvester, Sylvestre.ca is the website. You can honestly just search on the LCBO. Taylor Fladgate is pretty much everywhere. It's a rare store that doesn't have any. And worst case, you can always send me an email, s.sterling@sylvester.ca, and I'll help you out as best I can.
And circling back every now and then, I will look at the Fladgate. And I'm like, oh, let's see, are the tannins on sale? Are the tannins on sale?
Well, then I hope you've noticed that the 10-year
I
tawny,
have.
$6 off
I
until
have.
June 22nd.
Yes.
Did you buy a case, Matt?
I've not. I'm trying to. I had some birthday trips. There was wine purchased, and even I'm like, okay, you cannot be buying cases of port, or you can't be buying cases of everything. Actually, all right. Now, one other thing. It's one of the hardest things about saying no to buying wine, because you try something and you love it, and you're like, I need this, and if I don't have this, life is over,
that's
or
right.
There's not going to be any more wine again.
Yeah.
But if you don't buy it, 3 weeks later, there's something else you've fallen in love with.
Always.
Yeah.
That's the way. Always the way. Well, I mean, even one bottle of the 10-year Tawny at $30.95 instead of $36.95 is a tremendous bargain.
Hell yeah.
And it will not be on that limited time offer again until Christmas time.
Okay.
So, and you've got a couple of months. Like once you open Tawny, it's good to keep it in the fridge. You've got a couple of months. That should sort you right out to Christmas time. You're good. And also, Matt, I mean, you know me.
Yeah.
We'll help each other out.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, the one problem I've never had is, oh, there's still wine left in the bottle. What are we to do? Susan, really appreciate it. You're one of my original wine friends, and this has been way too long coming. You helped inspire me, and you helped guide me. And if I look at now my love of VQA, of Ontario wines, there's, first it's the winemakers and all of them, but there's other people part of it, and you certainly played a part in that, so I appreciate it.
Thank you, Matt. That's very kind of you to say, and it has been, it's been a long, fun journey, that's for sure, and I look forward to learning more about it, and of course, sharing that with people like you.
I can't wait to see where you are a year from now with Taylor Fladgate.
Same.
Thanks for being part of the pod.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Spotify, Apple, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.